Good afternoon, and welcome to the U.S. Institute of Peace. I'm Jackie Wilson, and along with my colleague Nina and some friends from Global Peace Initiative of Women, we're very pleased to welcome you here to the Institute today. And certainly we're honored to host our special guest, Dr. Sakina Yacoubi. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with some of my more popular colleagues who work on Afghanistan in very visible ways. And the Institute, as you know, hosts a number of events on topics such as rule of law in Afghanistan or peace and stability operations. So I think you probably have a good perspective of what we do here at the Institute as an independent federal institution. But there's more to the Institute than rule of law and post-conflict peace and stability operations, our grants program, and our fellowships program. And so we are really honored to talk about a side of Afghanistan that I think may be under-examined, under-discussed in terms of the importance to long-term stability in Afghanistan. So today I have with me my colleague, and we are with the Education and Training Center. So Nina is going to talk a little bit about our work in Afghanistan recently.
Nina? Welcome, everybody. Education and training, we have a new program in Afghanistan that we're developing. It's based on a model that we have in Iraq that has been very successful in Iraq. It's taken quite a few years for it to really build, but we're very confident that we'll have the same level of success in Afghanistan as well. Basically, we're working with a group of 36 trainers and teachers, Afghan trainers and teachers, and we're building a peace mediator network. In Iraq, this was very successful. Again, it's taken quite a few years for it to really come to fruition, but now our Iraq facilitators are conducting mediations, they're conducting trainings, all on conflict analysis, negotiation, mediation, and so forth. So we're in the beginning of this, to develop this network in Afghanistan. We've already conducted two training workshops, and Sakina asked the right question. Are there any women involved? Yes. We have 8 women, 36 facilitators, 8 of them are women. They're from all over Afghanistan. And we're working with an excellent local partner in Afghanistan on this initiative. So we have very high hopes for this network. We plan on conducting advanced training with them this year. And we also plan on incorporating them into a larger network of facilitators. So this is something that we're in the process of working on. We're very excited to basically develop an indigenous group of trainers working on peace building, conflict resolution, mediation, and so forth. So it's the beginning of a network that we're very confident will mirror the success that we've had in Iraq. So if anybody has any questions about it, feel free to ask me. The information on our Iraqi facilitator network is online, and we also have information about our Afghanistan network online as well.
In addition to that, I was in Afghanistan recently in August of 2008 with another colleague, Maria Jessup, implementing a program that was designed by a colleague, Linda Bishai, on integrating peace building into the classrooms. So it was a fascinating opportunity to interact with a number of educators from primarily from the provinces. We had very few from Kabul itself. And talk about democratic principles and citizenship and peace building and what it looks like in the classroom. And then they implemented, they applied that to a series of lesson plans. So from all different disciplines, from Islamic Sharia law to mathematics to history. And we showed them how they can integrate concepts of peace and citizenship and democracy into the classroom. So that was interesting. And again, if you want more information on that, we'd be glad to talk to you about it. But I wanted to reserve the time primarily for a discussion with Sakina. So I'd like to just kind of give you a little bit of background of how I came to know Sakina, and that's through a partnership with an organization in New York, Global Peace Initiative of Women, and Janelle Supri is here to represent them.
I'd like to thank Jackie for inviting me to speak a little bit briefly about GPIW, which was founded in 2002 primarily to bring women and young leaders together in the efforts toward community development and peace building, particularly in areas of conflict and post-conflict. We have two components to our organization. One is working with women like Sakina, who are very active in civil society, to bring about community cohesion as well as greater education for young women and young adults. And that also segues into our work with young leaders who come from many sectors in areas of conflict as well as post-conflict. We've done programs in with Sudanese, with young Iraqis, with young Cambodians, and now we're working with Sakina to bring together young adults from various areas of Afghanistan to talk about some of the key issues of importance to them, as well as the area in which Sakina's focused very heavily on, which is education.
So now it's my honor and privilege to introduce Dr. Sakina Yacoubi, and I think you're all aware of her biography, but just on background, she's the executive director of the Afghan Institute of Learning, and she is really an inspiration for all of us because she works with the underserved. She works with the women, the girls, the children who are in the provinces, in the very rural areas, again, who are underserved and I think are in great need of the services that she provides. But at the same time, she has a broader perspective of the tremendous value of education for women and girls in Afghanistan. So I'm so pleased that she's here to share her thoughts with us today. So, Dr. Yacoubi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. First of all, Jackie, thank you very much for this wonderful introduction, and thank you for inviting me today to be here with everyone who is interested in Afghanistan. Thank you. I would like to talk to you a little bit what AIL is doing, Afghan Institute of Learning. How did we start AIL, and why did we start AIL? First of all, you know, I born and grown up in Afghanistan, in Herat, Afghanistan. It's one of the second largest province of Afghanistan. While I was growing up in Afghanistan, I really, day to day, I could see that at that time women were suffering in Afghanistan. They were suffering from childbirth, they were suffering from violence, they were suffering from abuse, they were suffering in every respect of life. And at the time that I was a little girl, but I was fortunate, I had a father who had a vision, who really was not educated himself, but he really had a vision. He wanted not only his son to be educated, his daughter to be educated. So he gave me opportunity to go to school and get education. And from the time that I was there as a younger, I really always wanted to really work with the women of Afghanistan. Well, it's happened something that while Russians were invading Afghanistan and I came back to the United States, I completed my education in the United States. But day to day, every day, I was thinking about the women of Afghanistan. During the Taliban, during the Mujahideen, during the Russian invasion, everything, it was just I get the news, and constantly I was involved with the life of the women in Afghanistan. And I wanted to know how can we do something together to change the life of the women of Afghanistan. That was really the issue that I went to Pakistan. I went to Pakistan and went to the refugee camp. When I went to the refugee camp, I saw what the women of Afghanistan suffer. And from then, I decided that is that I'm going to stay here and I'm not going to go back to the US and I'm going to work there. Now it's 20 years I'm working with the women and children of Afghanistan. And at that time I knew that something must change their life, that they will be empowered and they will be self-sustained, that they will not have to deal the issue that they are dealing. And I knew that the only things that could change the life of the women of Afghanistan is education. Because no matter how much money you give, how much other training you give, if you don't educate the people, they are not going to be transformed. And that was the key issue for me. I said the most important things to concentrate in education. And what kind of education? Quality of education. How we could start quality of education? To start from the beginning. How we could give it the education according to their request. If they want, they will get it. If they didn't want, they don't get it. And I'm sure most of you will ask me a question, what do you mean by that? How you did that? I didn't go and say, I'm going to open this school in this area of this camp. First, I talked to the community, I talked to the people, I talked to the elder of the camp, and with their joining me, we open a school. I trained them because I believe in teacher training. The core of my program is teacher training. If you provide education, but you don't have an excellent teacher in the classroom, who is using participatory methodology, who are studying using student-centered technique, the children are not going to stay in the classroom. They're going to run away, especially in the classroom that there is not a blackboard, there is not a chair and table, there is not a books and material, there is not innovative way. So the students are not going to stay in the classroom. So that was it. We went after the teacher training, and we trained the teacher. Up to today, AOL trained 14,000 teachers. And you could see that the system of education has been revolutionized. How it revolutionized? Because we bring critical thinking to the children of Afghanistan, to the women of Afghanistan. They ask questions. They don't just go by rote memorization. And today, this methodology has been replicated all over Afghanistan. And proudly, I could say to you that 7 manuals that I wrote, every one of those manuals now are being inside Afghanistan and being used in the student-centered technique. And this is something that also we could see the outcome of it. The outcome of it today, yes, 90% of people of Afghanistan are uneducated. But the other 10% who have getting education, today their education is completely different from the education that they had a long time ago. Because now they are participating, they are asking questions, they are thinking, and they are thinking for the infrastructure of Afghanistan. They when they want to choose a leader, they want to know what kind of leader is going to be in Afghanistan. For example, if a lot of people are coming and say, well, we provide peace building, we provide human rights, we provide democracy, if the people are not educated, if the people do not understand what is the role of law, if the people do not understand what is the system to be implemented inside Afghanistan, how could they effectively work on that? But the key issue is education for women of Afghanistan, because the women of Afghanistan always have been pushed aside. Today, the women of Afghanistan are taking part, they are getting education, they are getting higher education. We have from preschool program to university. In this program, every woman takes part, and every one of them are very qualified, and every woman makes sure that their daughter gets education. And somebody asked me the other day in another conference that if you don't get involved the men, how you change the life of the woman? That is really true. When a woman gets educated and get trained and go to her house, when her family talk to her, it's different, and she educate the family. She really educate the husband, the brother, the father, his son, her son. And that is the way we are working. And then she is the one who invite them into the program. And now we have program for men and women, for children, but the point is that the woman of that program is inviting her family. And as a result, we continuously provide education for these people. AOL is right now is providing services for 350,000 women and children annually. We are running program in area of education and also in area of health. As you know, the health education is very, very important. People have to take care of themselves. In a country like Afghanistan, we don't have that much facility, we don't have that much service available for the people. So as a result, we want people to take prevention. Before in Afghanistan, prevention was not that much emphasized. Today, we have side-by-side health education. In every clinic, we are operating 5 clinics which run like a hospital inside Afghanistan. In each clinic, we provide services from 1,500 to 2,000 patients a month. You can imagine what kind of population we are reaching. But in each clinic, we have health education side by side, that the patient, before they see the doctor, they must get health education about prevention, prenatal, postnatal care, nutrition, hygiene, environmental health. These are the issues that we are really working with women. And when women get involved in this issue, they are aware of their environment, they are aware of what is good for themselves, what is good for the society, and they work on that issue. And also in area of education, we are providing training in computer. We have IT center. We have 4 IT center in Kabul, Herat, Bamiyan, and Mazar. Every one of these IT center is connected to the internet. These women are today communicating through the world globally. And today education is so different from the education that they get before, because today not only they are learning from the classroom, they are learning globally through the IT. And that is very, very important. These women are not going to be satisfied if somebody said, well, I give you a job here, this job, and you just sit there and do this work. Constantly they are searching. We have hard time keep them in the classroom. They go from one classroom to the next classroom. They go from 6th grade to 12th grade. They go from 12th grade, they want higher education. Let me tell you, today, proudly I could say to you that at least 80% of the students from AIL are going abroad for education, for a scholarship, for fellowship to India, to London, to America, because they are really bright and they are learning. And that is the way that we want to work with the women of Afghanistan, because I think it's about the time that the women of Afghanistan be a leader. Because for many, many years, we had men, but today we want to have a woman leader, and we are going to have a woman leader. Yes, we right now have women in the parliament, we have women minister, but I think the women of Afghanistan are going to be changed. This different era, and they are approaching education different way. And I could go on and talk about a lot of issues that AIL is providing, training in area of education and working with different sectors of the society. But you know, most of our work is being done in area of rural area. We work in 8 provinces of Afghanistan, mainly in rural area. We are not just concentrating working in Kabul. We work in Herat, we work in Bamiyan, we work in Mazar, we work in Jalalabad, we work in Logar, and also we work in Peshawar, Pakistan. So in each area that you can see, we are in a rural area. We are not in the city. We have office in the city, but mainly we work in the rural. And 80% of our employees are women. We have about 450 personnel. About 450 personnel, most of them, 80% are women. And you could see, and they are highly educated women who are running the program. And I can go on and talk about it, but I really prefer to you ask me a question. And thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
Well, if I might take the privilege just quickly to ask one question, and thank you. Thank you, first of all, for just the description of what you're doing, but also the energy. I think you can see how Sakina has been so effective. I wanted to ask about the approach. You seem to be doing a bottom-up approach, working in the provinces and educating teachers and that sort of thing. So I wanted to ask about the top-down, the issues of curriculum reform, the ministry and how they support your work, and basically the state of affairs in terms of education today in Afghanistan.
Well, the way we start from grassroots. We start with basic. We start with just literacy program first, and from the literacy we went upward. But how we are doing the curriculum, you know, the government of Afghanistan is developing the curriculum, and we must teach that curriculum, because according to the law, we have to follow that curriculum. But with AIL, something is very special, because we have the curriculum, we take the government curriculum, but beside the government curriculum that we have, which is math, science, social science, these are something according to the level of the class from 1st to 6th or from 1st to 12th. But what we do, we integrate health education, we integrate peace education, we integrate women's issue, we integrate a little bit about the governance. These are the area that we integrate into the curriculum of a school. We have to teach certain hours with the schedule that is given to us, but inside those hours, we space this other material and we discuss it. And that's the way we work with the woman.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Fazal Rabi Hafmi, Hubert Humphrey Fellow at the University of Washington, Seattle, now at the Stimson Center as part of the overall fellowship. Welcome, Dr. Seth. I missed your presence in the University of Washington. I was told coming. My question is in relation to the successful program that USAID is bringing to Afghanistan, the experience from Iraq. What do you see the differences between your program that you have been started and successful bottom-up approach, grassroots level? So what do you see, what are the differences and how will be complementing one another there?
First of all, let me to put it that way. I work as a non-profit NGO organization working with the civil society on my own, not being involved with the government work at all, okay? And how I start this work and what I do according to our culture and our tradition. You know, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
We've all been there.
Sorry. To answer your question, first time when I was starting this program in Pakistan, at that time I decided that I'm not going to do anything that it will threaten the people of Afghanistan. You know, we are a traditional society, we are very, we have been Muslim, we are Muslim, and we have a culture that we want to preserve. And our people are people that really, they are they will understand if you go about your work according to their culture and tradition. And that is the way we start. We start our work that way. And that is the reason AIL is very successful. I'm sure you have your information. Today, AIL is one of the most successful organizations inside Afghanistan and reaching hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. And not we go after them, they come after them. After us, they come and they say that we want you to implement program for us. But with the understanding of that they know that we are teaching something that they all agree with it. We approach them, let's say they want to study Islam. We encourage them to study Islam, but Islam with vision, with openness, and with meaning of Islam. When they study Quran, we try to explain to them the meaning of Quran. We teach them that. And once they understand, they could understand that Quran is being taught by us, but in a way that they understand more. They understand what is in Quran. Quran never says that you don't educate women. Never said that. Education is open to men and women in Islam. So when we explain that, they understand that, and they welcome this. That is the way we work with our society, according to their tradition and to their religion. But to having another curriculum from Iraq or from wherever, I think that the first thing, that curriculum must be a pilot project, and to see that if that curriculum is fit this society or not. Because Iraqi is different than Afghani, or Afghani are different than Iraqi. We could not, maybe it will work 100% the same as it did in Iraq, but I am not sure. If I was doing implementing a project, I want to know exactly what the Afghan society want according to their culture, religion, and according the way that they have their life. So that is only answer I could give you. Thank you very much.
Yes. I just want to describe a little bit, Nina, about how you're helping ensure that the curriculum or that the materials fit into Afghan.
Sure. Our program is, I don't want to take away from Dr. Sakina, but what we're doing is we're basically developing a network of mediators, and they're coming up with we're training them on our frameworks of conflict resolution, but then they're taking that and adapting it for Afghanistan. So they're coming up with their own frameworks on negotiation, especially mediation, and all the conflict resolution skills that we teach. So this is coming from our facilitators. It's not coming from us. So this is very much a grassroots, and we're working with a local partner called WADON, the Welfare Association for the Development of Afghanistan. So that's something that we did in Iraq. We had a similar model. So the model is similar, but of course the content and the way trainers teach is very different depending on the society. So,
if I could just add to that, what we do in the Education and Training Center is focused on some core skills, communication skills, negotiation skills, mediation or working with third parties, and problem solving. And we do this type of training all over the world, and in each country, it's received within the context of the particular country. So as Nina said, we have frameworks, but one of the
the ways that we work is we like to develop sustainable relationships with local NGO partners and trainers, people such as Dr. Sakina and in other countries, so that over time we develop a collaborative relationship, and again, they take what material we have and they apply it in their own context, so it's very adaptable. We don't come in with solutions. We don't come up in with a set framework or curriculum. But we definitely might try to draw on the traditions and apply it within the cultural context. So, okay, over here, please, and then here.
I'm Syed Dafar Hashmi from Voice of America Afghanistan Service. I have two questions. First of all, regarding the security-wise and financially, what challenges your organization faces? And second question was about the duplication of efforts. How are you coordinating with the government of Afghanistan and the good number of organizations that work over there carrying the same mission?
Thank you. First of all, to answer the security, you know about the security issue day to day. The security is getting worse and worse in Afghanistan. And how it affects our organization, thanks to God, so far it did not affect our organization. One of the reasons that it did not affect our organization, because our organization, again, most of them are women, we wear our hijab, we protect ourselves, we take security precaution, and we are not doing anything that is threatening the people of Afghanistan. According to that, we have been very successful so far and have not been touched. Economical-wise, yes, Afghanistan is a very poor country, and funding is very hard in Afghanistan to get in Afghanistan or from abroad. We have the hard time right now, especially is the time that right now I think everybody has a problem with economy, and we have our problem. But this year so far, we have not been really, again, affected by economical problem. AIL has have its funding. It's we are doing our program, and hopefully next year we will not face a problem with that funding. And regarding the government of Afghanistan and duplication, we try to build the capacity of the government of Afghanistan. We work side by side with the government of Afghanistan as much as we could. We give them teacher training. As I told you, we train 14,000 teachers. That means that the people who are teaching in the public school, we have trained every one of them. Of course, there is 5 million children are going to school. There is 60,000 teachers to be trained. It's not enough. It's a long-term process. We need to continuously work on it. And do we work with the government? Yes, we work with the government. Do the government support us? The government doesn't have the capacity to support us. They don't have human resource. They don't have the funding for us. But we get our own funding, and we do have the human resource ourselves because we train our teacher, and that's the way we work. I hope I answer you. Thank you.
Ian Guest from the Advocacy Project. Two questions. We've read a lot about the attacks by the Taliban against girls, and a lot of schools have been closed down. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the attitude of the Taliban to girls' education in areas that they now control. And is it possible to reach any accommodation with them? In other words, could they be persuaded to support education? How does that actually work in the villages? And the second question is about the government and the capacity of the government. We read an awful lot now about the corruption of the Karzai government, and there's an implication that the United States is cutting that government adrift almost. So I wonder if you could give us your perspective on the Ministry of Education, whether you think it's a viable partner, whether you see any evidence of corruption, whether you think it's efficient, and is that a ministry that donors can work with?
Thank you very much. I tried to answer as much as I could. First of all, to see that how the Taliban are looking to the program on education and how they accept the education of the girls. First of all, I don't know any Talib to see what they feel, or I never had a chance to sit with the Talib across the table. But I have been sitting with the elder of the community, a lot of people who had restricted, rigid mentality on women's issue on gender. That I sit with people, I communicate with them, I negotiate with them, and once they come to the conclusion that they understood me by knowing what I am providing for their girls and their daughter, as I said before, when they understood that I really do teach them, I teach them in Islam and I teach them behavior of a good Muslim and also educate them that they will be educated society, and they understand a lot of other concepts in education regarding to Islam and regarding to Quran. Once they understand that, they really work with us. I go village to villages. The first thing I do, I have a meeting with the elder of the community, with the men and women. I sit aside, drink tea with them hours and hours. Once we come to a conclusion, they accept it. And they are the one who really come in my office and they request my program. As a matter of fact, I never go to a village or to a city that I go say, I want a program to be implemented here. They come all the way to Kabul, all the way to Herat. They request the program, and then we go. Right now, I have hundreds of people with in the waiting list that they want to get involved in the program. Because lack of funding, I could not accommodate all of them. But with the government corruption, I really tell you that much, that in a country which have been 36 years of war, in a country that suffers so much, to expect that overnight is going to be solved all our problem, is something that is asking too much. Do we want to get really a system implemented? Yes. Is there a system right now in Afghanistan? No. The system is falling. Yes, we have a wonderful constitution, but is it that constitution being implemented? No. And do we want that? We have the best constitution that is in Muslim world right now, but it's not being implemented. If that constitution is implemented, just taking part, I think that our country will be okay. But there is maybe unjust, a lot of unjust, a lot of problem, but again, we are working toward it. Thank you. I hope I answered. Yeah.
Can you not tell us at all about the attitude of the Taliban in areas that they control? I mean, I understand what you're saying about working with the villagers and the elders and sort of persuading them. Do you think it would be possible to persuade the Taliban to accept education?
I think the Taliban, if they are Afghan, if they are Afghan people, I think yes, you can persuade them, because I believe in Afghan. I know Afghanistan. I know Afghan people, what they want for that society. But if you are dealing with foreigners who are not Afghan, who call themselves Talib, I have no idea how they accept the education, because it's up to them. They are there for some different agenda, for whatever they are there, I don't know. But if they are Afghan, I tell you that by working with Afghan men, by working with very rigid Afghan men, I do work with them, they change. They see that we are working, that nothing is threatening Afghan society, is nothing threatening the education of Afghanistan as a Muslim, as a tradition culture. They have no problem with it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Larry Lesser. Back in 2006, I participated in a State Department and Defense Department evaluation of training and equipping the Afghan National Police. The model that was adopted initially for that program was based on what had worked successfully in Kosovo a few years earlier. And early on in the program, the people managing it discovered that there was a fundamental difference between police recruits in Kosovo and in Afghanistan, and that was that 70% to 80% of the Afghan recruits were illiterate. And so they had to go back and reconceive the program, because training an illiterate person to be a policeman is not the same as training somebody who can read and write. In light of that, of course, the illiteracy rate is even worse for girls than for boys in Afghanistan. So what is your approach to literacy? What languages do you teach? And what do you do for books?
Thank you. First of all, I want to congratulate you that you, when you did the evaluation and you see how it worked, because if the people don't know how to read and write, how they can be a soldier and be trained, it's wonderful that you said that. I thank you. For the literacy program, for my program, for Afghan Institute of Learning, first of all, I can tell you that today I have in a classroom a woman who is 60 years old and with a girl that is 15 years old. They are sitting in the same classroom. They don't know how to read and write. I design material for the girls who is 15 years old and for women who is 60 years old. The material that is designed according to their capacity, how much fast they can learn. As fast they learn, we design material for them and promote them class to class. And that's the way we do. So we have literacy program. We have a literacy program for all ages because in Afghanistan we have today a girl who is 15 years old, a girl who is 21 years old, don't know how to read and write. But they are fast learner. Once they come to a class, in a matter of 2 years, they go 4th grade, 5th grade, and they get the test. And they, once they took the test, they pass the grade, then they go to the next level. And we design their material. We get our own material because we are evaluating and monitoring them day to day we teach them. According to their speed, we provide for them material. Thank you.
So you teach literacy in the local language?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In Persian and Pashto, both. We don't teach in English. Literacy program is in Dari and Pashto. Yes.
Okay, this gentleman and then over here.
My name is Rajiv Dekurs, and I'm getting my master's in conflict management at SAIS down the street. Thank you so much for talking. I was wondering if you could talk about what role, if any, the international community could play in bolstering efforts such as yours, and also in what ways maybe that they have not been very helpful or have been even counterproductive in the reconstruction efforts.
Thank you. The international community. First of all, you know that Afghanistan needs a lot of export because we don't have human resource, because for 36 years we lost the highly educated, our highly educated society. They are gone, they are killed, or they are gone from the country. They are not there. We do need export. But then how this export is providing services for the people of Afghanistan? I think that mentality toward the international community, they bring training. They train our own people, and if they work with our people, with our local people, that is wonderful. If they come for long term, that is great. But if they come in a short term for 6 months or a year and they want to leave, I don't think that is a good way, and being a good way financially also, because they are requiring so much money compared to a national organization. And so the fund will be in expand, but the outcome is not that much. So if the international community comes with expertise and try to train our own people and stay in a long term and work with the community, with our local people, I think it's wonderful to be. But if they are not coming with that kind of planning, I think that they are really also is bad for my country, because they are teaching our young people to get huge salary without any impact, without working very hard. And that has been a chaos inside Afghanistan. Economy is very bad. People are in poverty. People are poor. But there is a very, maybe 1% of society who just finished from 12th grade. They know English and they know computer. As a result, they are earning $2,500 in dollars. And they are doing the international community work. That part, I don't like it. Really, to tell you the truth, I don't like. Maybe I will be pointed bad, but everybody will be against me. But I love Afghanistan. The people of Afghanistan suffer so much. And I think that we need the international community who come with experience, with expertise. Thank you.
So this woman, please.
My name is Renu Jain, and I work with the Academy for Educational Development. And we do a lot of work on girls' education, and we have programs in Africa, Yemen, Morocco. And from our experience, as well as looking at the literature, there are some common barriers to girls' education, you know, lack of toilets, cost of financial, cost of just paying for education, security situation, distance to school, are often cited as some of the examples, some of the barriers to girls' education. Have you had these kind of problems, and how have you tried to address them?
Yes, we do have some problem, as I could tell you that about maybe 40% of our people are orphan or widow, And so what we do, they don't have that much income. We provide for them a fellowship, a scholarship, transportation money, a stipend. That is the way we work with them. And also accommodation, we try to use community participation. Community participation means that when we open a women learning center, we ask that community to give us the space. Once they give us the space, then that space, if it has the facility for toilet stop like that, fine. If it didn't, we built right away in that facility. That the first thing we do, we make sure that the water is there and that facility is there, that the woman will be safe. Because women, that is one issue, that if they are not safe and they don't feel safe and they don't, their need is not reached, then they will not come. And that we try. As a matter of fact, we have a place that women comes with their children. They sit side by side with their baby in their arm and they learn. If you go to our Women Learning Center, classroom is 40 women sitting, maybe half of them has baby in their arm, sitting with the baby and learning. Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
My name is Bafin Masood, I'm from Afghanistan. From your perspective, how can we increase female teachers in rural areas, given that we don't have many educated women in rural areas of Afghanistan?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, I am glad you asked this question. I can share with you. In Afghanistan, yes, we don't have enough teacher and we don't have educated teacher, especially in the rural areas. Sometimes we go there, there is not one single person that we could find that teach. What we do in that area, we take about two or three people from the city and let the children to learn. As soon as they start the literacy program with those people, in a matter of 2 to 3 years, we have somebody from that community to be somebody that then teach the next level. And I want to share with you a story that you will, I am so happy and delighted to share this story with you. We had the Women Learning Center. There was one woman who came there and she fought her family to come to the center because they were not allowing her to come. She had two children. She's 22 years old. But she came to this center. In a matter of 4 years, she became a teacher in that community. Not only she became a teacher, she is the supervisor of our health post. Most of those women who graduate from that Women Learning Center, they are not right now working in our health post. Health post means that health education, they are going house to house, providing health education to the family, how to take care of their body, how to take care of their children, how to provide their clean water, how to boil their water. This is the health facilitator that do that in the community. And this woman is the supervisor of that community because she is so smart, so intelligent, and now she learn a skill, income generation skill, that she now pay somebody else because she's so close at night, and she pay somebody else to come and do her housework, and she is wonderfully happy about it. And she said that right now she is respected in the family. Everybody loves her. Everybody respects her. They come and ask her advice because she is educated. It's changing their life. I could see day to day women's life is being changed in village to village. But yes, it takes a while. It's hard to start. But we use a method that we can try to provide as much as we could from the same community, because that is much important than we bring outside that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, please. My name is Colette Chabot, and I've been a consultant. With CARE for girls' education in Afghanistan since 1999. And going back to the gentleman's question, Yelena, you did girls' schools, homeschool during the time of the Taliban. So, and some of those were more open and some of those were more closed. In CARE, we did them as well. And there were places you could talk to the Taliban, or they had cut deals, local leaders had cut deals, and they still controlled their area and they did what they wanted to do. How did you deal with that? I think that might answer this kind of question a little closer.
Well, thank you for during the Taliban, I worked in Afghanistan underground. I had 80 school underground, 3,000 students from grade 1 through grade 8. But never I have been approached by a Talib to close my school. A lot of school was closed from CARE, from IRC, from Swedish committee, but none of my school was closed. Why is not closed? Did I see a Talib outside waiting and seeing who is going to come here and there? Yes, I saw somebody who was sitting and watching who is going to that compound. But one thing that is really save us, because again, I am going to emphasize again and again, we went according to culture and tradition. We didn't let any outsider go to that house. The teacher was from that community. Community protect that teacher. And when we went there, we went with hijab, we went with chador, we went inside, we took supplies, we took teacher training, we took the salary, but we were not touched by them. And those are the students right now sitting in the University of Kabul, in engineering school, medical school, law school. And I am very proud of them. And I have a very good relationship with them. And I am so happy that at that time, they did go to school. They had the opportunity to go to school. And I was working at four provinces of Afghanistan that time. Herat, Kabul, Logar, Jalalabad, under the Taliban. And I do work with CARE. I do a lot of their work also.
I know.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here, please, and then back there.
I'm with the technicality. I'm with the International Center for Religion and Diplomacy. We've been doing teacher training for Madrasa teachers in Pakistan for about 5 years. It's been emphasis on critical thinking and education. And so I was wondering, in your work in Afghanistan, do you train teachers also of madrasas, or is it mainly public schools, or what is sort of the breakdown between public, private, or madrasa schools? And my second question is if you could speak a little bit more about your, you said you also have a program in Peshawar in Pakistan. Is this program teaching Pakistanis or Afghans or in Pakistan? Are you teaching Urdu or Afghan language, or maybe you can learn a little more about that program?
Thank you. First, to answer your question about the program in Peshawar, we first start our program in 1990 in Pakistan, Peshawar, Pakistan. And it's only for Afghan, it's not for Pakistani. And we have program, we have, at that time I had 15 school, 27,000 students in Pakistan, and now we have only 6 school, we have 3 women learning center, we have 1 clinic in the university. All of them are learning in Pashto and Farsi, Dari. They are not studying Urdu. They know Urdu because they live in Pakistan. And one of the reasons we didn't close the program yet, because there's still another 1.5 million refugees in Pakistan. And they don't have a home to come to Afghanistan. And that's the reason we're supporting that program. And do we train the madrasa teacher? We don't have madrasa inside Afghanistan that I know. I don't work with madrasa at all. But we work with public and private school. The public school teacher we train, and also we train the Women Learning Center. AIL was the first non-profit organization who set up a Women Learning Center. Now it's being replicated all over Afghanistan. A Women Learning Center is operating in an area that there is no school. There is that area doesn't have any education. And so we set up the center. We start with the women and work from there. And that is the Women Learning Center. We have about 70 Women Learning Center across Afghanistan. In each center, each year we graduate about from all the center 20,000 students annually, and that is the way we operate, but not madrasa that I know.
Okay. May I comment?
Question
on
back here. Do you want? I'm sorry. You want to add something
yes.
to the?
For your information, in Afghanistan, we do not have any political madrasas that is run by the parties, as in Pakistan. We do have madrasas that is purely community-led and community-owned madrasas that is not linked with the politics, and that is the most positive point of the madrasas. We do have 5 to 7 official madrasas that is being taken care of by the Ministry of Education.
Thank you. And I intended to recognize my colleague Kamar al-Huda, who had to leave early, but he also does considerable work in Pakistan with madrasas. So there's information on our website about some USIP projects which might interest you as well. So I believe we were at this gentleman back here.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Ted Morrow with ED101. We provide training to administrators and government agencies. I wanted to ask you about the provincial reconstruction teams. The U.S. military has moved into the realm of education, and they'll be the first to admit they really don't know as much as they would like to. Could you describe a little more of ways in which the provincial reconstruction teams could better support education in Afghanistan?
Thank you. You know, I really don't work that much with them, but recently I have been approached by them. that if I can work with them and give them some training. I did give them some advice, and I talked to them a little about it, that if they work with me, they must work with me according to my policy and procedure. And so they are thinking about it. I just approached by them a month ago, and I am going to Afghanistan and see what is the result of that meeting is going to be. Hopefully we work with together. But you see, that team is going to work if they are letting, again, the local NGO to work, and they really just provide the financial and do the monitoring, that would be good. But if they are going to do the training, first of all, they are not expert. They don't have the training in area of education. And second, most of the people we want to train is women, and it would be very hard for them to do a training for women. This is a big issue in Afghanistan. So I don't know how this problem will be solved, but it's interesting to see what we can come about. Because they told me that they will build a shelter. If I asked them to, if they can build a shelter, then I will bring all the women and do the training, and then they can come and monitor once in a while, but not always there.
What's that monitoring do you have in mind?
Monitoring means that if they want to know that do we do the training, do we spend the money right place, yes. But do they get involved in, to be involved, no.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes. Sorry, yes.
Mm. Okay. Other questions? Mm. Yeah, please.
What you're just doing deciding on the drug education, well, I had boys. I grew up in a shower in Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
In the same refugee camp that my state over there. I have the same opportunities, not for education, not for anything. Why you're just emphasizing on the education of drugs? Well, I had boys.
Why not boys? Absolutely. We are educating the boys, but why we emphasize on women? A woman in Afghanistan for many, many years have been not educated because they were not allowed to come to get education. You know, during the Taliban, during the Mujahideen group, and during the Soviet Union even. Because when Soviet invaded Afghanistan, everybody kept their daughter and their wife out of their program. So they kept them in the house. They didn't want them to go in school. So as a result, we have this huge group of women who are getting age of 15, 20, 21, 26 years old, and they don't know how to read and write. The boys at least have some opportunity to go to school or go to their father or go to their uncle, learn something. Still, we have 90% of Afghanistan is illiterate. Remember that. Still, we don't have an educated society. But the women of Afghanistan is the one who are the victim. Because the woman is, if a woman is educated, the whole family gets education. Because the woman makes sure that her daughter and her son get education. And also, if a woman is educated, the citizen of Afghanistan will be a better citizen. There will not be a sheep following somebody else against around. The woman makes sure that the household really as a unit together. She is really, a woman of Afghanistan are tough, intelligent, smart, like any other woman in the world. And you know, every mother controls the, as the head of the household. So I think if she is educated, she will make sure that her children are educated. That is the reason that we are really emphasizing education on women. We know that the women get education, men will get education. I hope I answer you. I don't know. Thank you. Yes.
Other questions? I had a question for you, Dr. Sakina. It was regarding your process of getting buy-in from the men in the community, meeting with the elders and that sort of thing. I wanted to ask you about the buy-in from the leadership from the top levels on down in terms of girls and women's education in Afghanistan and just really the state of discussion. Is this a topic that's being discussed in Afghanistan today? Is it a problematic topic, or is it just not talked about in the public sphere, and you just continue to work at the grassroots?
Well, first of all, we work with the grassroots level from the bottom up. But then, also, as I told you, we have higher education that people in all kinds of, they are involved in computer science, they are involved in pedagogy, they are involved in politics, they are involved in leadership. This group, they sit around the table and they do discuss a lot of issues. And as today's issue is not only is the good governance, is ethics, responsibility, what is the rule of law, what is the problem in Afghanistan. These issues are being constantly discussed with each other. And you know, the problem that is facing all the women, One is the security. The main challenge is security. If security is solved, I think the women of Afghanistan accomplish a lot, because they are communicating. They are having interview in the TV, they are have interview with newspaper, they are communicating, and they are talking in the radio, so they will be around, and they will really, their voice will get to the public. But the security is not allowing them that much to really move around. And that's one issue. The second issue is that is really hurting the women of Afghanistan is poverty. Because Afghanistan right now, the people are very, very poor. They are not having enough to just provide food on their table. As a result, women, when they work, as soon as they finish their 8 hours, they have to go home and try to provide things for their family. So they could not go in another agenda to really work in this topic, in this issue, and go spend more times for it, and also money is involved, because if they go somewhere else and do something else, it's involved economic situation, and they don't have that much. And that is the reason we are working in income generation, to provide for women also some kind of a skill that they will be self-sufficient and then be empowered. That's we working in tailoring, embroidery, carpet weaving. These are also other issues that we work with women. And as a result, a lot of them are getting some income from that.
Great. Please.
I have a question about the more rigid approach that you said that you've spoken to more rigid people and you were able to get through to them.
Mm-hmm.
We in the United States don't understand. And therefore, you know, you'll hear people who blame Islam or blame Afghan culture or, you know, things that are really not, shall we say, polite.
Yes.
I'm not looking for a blame, but I'm looking for an understanding. How can we understand, as Americans, what causes this kind of conservatism and rigidity? And how can we better deal with it intellectually?
Well, first of all, women of Afghanistan, that I say that the men, they really control their life and abuse them and violate their rights. For example, they believe, some of them, they believe that Islam does not allow women to get education. They believe Islam in it. If you sit down and tell them that Islam did not say that, here verses is, first verse verses from Quran, it says, you know, so you explain to them. And then there is a verse in Quran that it says that men and women equal right on learning. So if you read for them, they don't understand Arabic, but they could see that you are reading Arabic. But then you translate for them, they understand, they listen to it, and they are very good believer in Islam. But they don't know Islam. They don't know the theology of Islam. They don't know the Sharia. They didn't study Quran. Somebody told them. Their grandfather, great-grandfather said that, okay, 5 days a time, pray and read in your prayer this, and that's it. And now your wife cannot study, your wife cannot go outside, your wife has to cover yourself, because all these things, Islam says it. But when you explain to them that Islam, here, these are Quran, I'm picking up these verses by verses from Quran. Quran, the best democracy that you can follow. Really, today, if human rights, people are talking about human rights today, if you really study Quran, it is really equality and justice. That's human rights. And if you explain to them that, they understand you. And you explain it with a custom and a culture that you are. I'm a Muslim. I'm an Islam Muslim believer. And I do my prayer. But also, I wear my hijab every time. This today, not yesterday, from the time I had been born, I wear my hijab. But they see me, who I am, what I am saying. They follow. They really do. And also a way that you communicate with them, you promise them something, you deliver. You don't lie to them. People don't like lying. People, no matter how simple they are or how complicated they are, if you promise and promise over and over and you don't deliver, they don't trust you. And if you promise, you deliver. I never tell them I give you a salary of $1,000 or $1,500 every month. I said, I have this, and I try to give you this as much as I could. It's not the same as government give you, but it's a little over, but it's a balance there. They see that. They see that hundreds of people are getting salary, the same thing. I don't see this is my cousin, this is my uncle, this is this. Everybody get the same equal amount. And they see justice being implemented. And that is Quran says that. And they don't fight. They understand. They accept. They are human beings.
Did you have
a...
Go ahead.
I think that for many of us, you know, we're reading the paper every day, and it just it seems as if it's getting so much worse for girls going to school, being burned, schools being burned down. What's your opinion on that? I mean, are the challenges greater now than they were?
The challenge is greater, not only for girls, as that person was saying, why girls? Not only girls, men are being killed, innocent children are being killed. Yes, school is being burned, but the school has boys and girls together. So I don't think the target is just girls. The target is security. Security of Afghanistan is in danger right now. And the security is, you know, it's just, it's the system is not running right. If the system was running right, I think that we will be okay. I believe. I have hopes. I have hopes for Afghanistan. I don't know. But maybe that is my agenda.
I just had a thought, which I probably shouldn't share, but I thought it was ironic because the Talib, the root of the word, is student. And so it seems like there's, you know, a natural connection there in terms of... you know, some of the efforts to destroy education were at the same time their focus is really to study. So I just thought that was ironic. Can talk about that another time. So please. Oh, I'm sorry. This gentleman was next. Please.
My name is Tom Wolfson. I'm a retired Foreign Service officer. I apologize for coming in late. But I have another event to attend. I wanted to ask and. I presume you've covered this before, but I'm curious because I just spent 2 weeks working with a provincial reconstruction team in the Kumar province. What parts of the country have you been doing your organization been able to operate in, given the security situation?
We are working in, as I said, 8 provinces of Afghanistan. In Kabul, we work in north part toward the Panjshir, in Mirbachakot, in Kapisa. And we work in Herat, we work in Jalalabad, we work in Bamiyan, we work in Mazar. And also we work in Peshawar. And I am hoping that I get to go to 33 provinces of Afghanistan. But financially, it's not possible yet. Yeah.
Thank you. We had this over here again, and then please here.
Yes, I just saw your comment about Talib. I mean, even during the time of the Taliban in 1999, when I was there, there are a lot of the people who were cooperating were people who were leaders in their village, were relatively conservative villages. They didn't have anything to argue with the Taliban about. And so they continued to run their village. And those were Afghans who were running their villages, Afghans, I'm sure, that were in many of the home schools that you were working with. The community around there didn't have a single Talib there because they were too thinly spread. But it may be different now, because there are more Taliban now than there were back in the late 90s. And there are more Taliban now than there were probably in 2001. And so whether this, and all are not alike. And so I think that your experience of having villages and communities that were mainly still run by the same leaders that had been there before, not people that had spent their time in madrasas in Pakistan, everywhere in the world, we've been able to talk to people that were supposedly conservative, and they send their girls to school under the right circumstances. But a school is not a school is not a school. A madrasa in Pakistan is not a madrasa in Afghanistan. They're two very different things. And the schools that get burned and closed in SWAT are government schools, where they're putting girls and boys together, or they're sending girls to walk a long distance to a school that has some male teachers. That school is not a school. There are many different types of schools, and some survive and some don't. But Kenny, your schools, your home schools, by 2001, were there any other schools that were still working besides the home schools?
Well, in Peshawar, Pakistan, we had a school that it was like public school.
No, I mean in Afghanistan.
At that time, home school, just only home school. Only home school.
So when
yes.
It's really bad, that's what it goes back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, home school. Only home school.
Okay, please.
Yes, I just wanted to ask this gentleman here about the madrasas that are run by the government in Afghanistan. What do they teach, and are they do they teach women as well as men, and are they include academics or academic subjects?
Do you want, please?
Thank you. Thanks so much. That's a good question. Yes, there are madrasas that is under the education ministry. They teach Islamic subjects plus sciences. I have been graduated from madrasa myself in Kabul, called Darul Ulum Arabi Kabul. Upper than the madrasas, there are both boys and girls in Sharia faculty and law faculty. However, in madrasas, no, there is no girls, and that's for various reason. The curriculum is under the ministry. It's teaching both Islamic and sciences.
If I could just add to that, this recent workshop we did in August, as I mentioned, included quite a few Sharia law faculty from the provinces, and it was fascinating to discuss with them concepts of democracy and citizenship and peace building and how to integrate those principles into their classroom. And so we had, a large number of faculty who were quite interested in these concepts and seeing how they could apply them to the curriculum that they're using in their particular school. So it's not a foreign concept. It's not something that's inconsistent with what they're already teaching. So, other questions? Anybody?
Who writes the textbooks in these schools, especially for the elementary level or middle school? Based on my own experience, I grew up in Pakistan during the whole Soviet invasion and jihad, and I remember the makeshift refugee schools. Some of these books basically fail the basic standards of teaching and learning. For instance, in one of these math books, it used to teach us that, okay, Tawab has three guns, and Majid has six guns, and they killed four Soviet troops. How many bullets left? I wonder as to who writes the textbooks these days.
Yes, I will be happy to answer that. First of all, those books have been written during the Mujahideen time, and there was a war, and they were having, not that I agree with that at all at that time in Pakistan. Every day I went to the meeting and fight those books that didn't get anywhere. We have to teach them, but we took them in the classroom and we taught something else in our 27,000 students, because really we could not teach those books. Were awful books, but they were there. But now Ministry of Education with the UNESCO and UNICEF, they developed the curriculum. We have better books, much better books. Those books are not anymore around, and so they have science books, they have social books, they have all kinds of books. That it's really good curriculum, but still there is a need for to change again. Yes, but every time you change the curriculum, it requires so much effort, so much finance, that is very hard for the Ministry of Education right now to really develop the second new curriculum. The curriculum is better than the time of Mujahideen in Pakistan, but still there is a need to the second curriculum be developed, yes. But we do integrate our peace education, our democracy, our women's rights, human rights, every one of those subjects goes to our curriculum and integrate it to it. So the people who want to learn, they learn.
Hello. My name is Larry Cohen. I'm also a retired Foreign Service officer from the Department of State, and I served in Afghanistan on a few occasions starting in 2003. And I wanted to just say, from my observation, there's been tremendous progress in education at all levels, and so there shouldn't be an impression here that education has been going down. It's actually been going up at a very good pace, and there's been tremendous progress. I also taught at Herat University, so I have more familiarity with the higher education than with the lower education. One of the problems we observed was the lack of access to books. Now, libraries are dysfunctional in Afghanistan. They do not lend books. They follow the old Soviet model. Mm-hmm. They tried to convince the libraries that libraries are supposed to let the students, let the visitors have books, and then they would return them. But that is still not the policy yet in most places. but to get books into their hands, and unfortunately we're talking mostly English books for university students, I think is probably one of the easiest things we can accomplish at a very low cost, and yet would have tremendous impact both for men and women, of course, at the university level. What do you think about that?
Thank you. I want to a little elaborate on that. I am glad you brought that subject. And if I give this impression that nothing has been taken in Afghanistan or education in a low rate, no. Afghanistan improved a lot, especially in the area of education, especially in the area of women's education. That is definitely, it's just improving day to day. And it's going in a very fast rate. That is the one issue that 100% is going very, very fast. So we could not even keep the students in one classroom. They keep going from one to the next one. Sometimes we have to kick them out of the compound because we have to close the compound. They do not want to go. That is the way they study. So this is the issue that is really true. And the second issue of books. The time that I was in Peshawar, Pakistan, I had a system of library that I carry books from one province to the next province in a box. From one school to the next, even inside Afghanistan and in Pakistan, that students could read. We carried the books in a box. 1 week it was in one school, the next week it was in another school. That's the way we have a movable, mobile library. Now, in every center that we have, in every office that we have a library. A library is that it has so much books that the students can come and take out the books and study. And also university also is changing their system. They are lending books, but there is not that much book available. You are right, absolutely. But I think that the books is something that really it will help the people of Afghanistan, but not only English book. We need lots of Persian books too, because they are reading in Pashto and Persian, and they need in their own language books. And the books, if they are there, library everywhere, people using it because people are just so thirst for education and they are learning day to day. Thank you. It would be good, very good.
I wanted to mention some excellent work that's being done by an organization that's represented here by my sister-in-law, the Lamia Foundation, that has been collecting goods and donating them and shipping them to Afghanistan. And I don't know if you recently had books in the shipment that went.
We did not have books. Okay. And actually, it's one of the reasons why I'm here, is to see how we can help. But also, we are doing school supplies, mm-hmm. More pencils, notebooks. But right now we're in the starting phase, and it's a lot of military people who have served over in Afghanistan that have started this organization, mm-hmm. that are over there now still, and that want to distribute stuff out into the different areas.
Well, it would be a wonderful thing that if you can send books and you can send a used computer from here, that it will go to school, because right now we have two private schools, and also we have 70 women learning center in each one of them. We need material, we need supplies, we need books, we need notebook, pencil, pen, but I could not carry from there because if I carry, it costs me so much. I do not want to carry from there and I want to buy from there, that it helps the economy and also, but if we could collect from people here, which they have a lot, and be shipped there through the military, it would be wonderful, yes. It would be wonderful to receive those things. Especially books, especially science books, and especially science books, which is a teacher guide. We really need those chemistry, physics, biology, science book that it has as a teacher guide, and teacher can learn how to use the science book. It's very important.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, I think, Sakina, you have been just an amazing wealth of knowledge and perspective, and again, I think inspiration for all of us in terms of giving us hope that there is some really wonderful work going on with girls and women and education and healthcare in the rural areas. And so we thank you for your work. We thank you for spending time with us here today, and thank you all for attending.
Thank you very much.